Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I've even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is, but Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact. Not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence, not a Ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charge is left on the thing. And it's, I don't know, man. It holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge. I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet. Get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. Hello, sweet friends. Happy Bicycle Day. It's April 19th, and that means that it's essentially Christmas for LSD. It's on this day that Albert Hoffman, back in 1943, took the first intentional dose of LSD, thought he was dying, got on his bicycle, rode home from his laboratory, lay in bed, and freaked out. He had an astoundingly terrifying LSD trip because there was no one to refer to ask if this thing would ever end. He thought he was dying, and it was a monstrous trip. In a way, he's like the psychedelic Jesus. He died so that we could live. His intensely challenging acid trip gave birth to a cultural revolution that still reverberates through history to this very day. And thanks to Albert Hoffman, a lot has changed culturally in our society, and a lot continues to change. Albert Hoffman gave birth to incredible works of art, incredible philosophies, and incredible visionaries who continue his work to this very day. And this is a special bicycle day because we are witnessing the easing of some of the horrific restrictions that the United States government and other governments of the world have placed on studying these psychoactive compounds. So this is a very special bicycle day, and that's why I'm releasing on this bicycle day this wonderful conversation I had with two of my favorite people on earth, Alex and Allison Gray. These are visionary artists who have spent an entire lifetime working not only on bringing the visual aspect of the psychedelic state into this dimension, and only a few people that I can think of are true masters at doing this. Terence McKenna was a master at linguistically bringing back from the psychedelic realm that state of consciousness, and Alex and Allison Gray are experts at visually bringing back the states of consciousness that are accessible through psychedelic compounds into this dimension. And not only are they experts at that, but they are community builders. They have a beautiful community that is formed around them, and they've created an amazing place called COSM in upstate New York, which I highly recommend you go and visit. They have a bed and breakfast there where Alex and Allison's art is on display. And what's very special about their art is that if you spend some time sitting in front of it and absorbing it, you will find yourself entering into a psychedelic state of consciousness, whether or not you have ingested a psychedelic. And that will help you realize that we don't just need chemical compounds to induce these states of consciousness, but that art itself can be a psychedelic, and that we don't just need to ingest a compound that passes the blood-brain barrier, but we can also ingest psychedelics through the optic nerve and through our ears. We can also have psychedelic experiences just by being in the presence of a group of people who are visionaries. And that, to me, is why what Alex and Allison Gray are up to right now is very special, because they are currently building a temple called Entheon in upstate New York. And this temple is going to house Alex Gray's Sacred Mirrors exhibition. And it's also going to house much of Allison Gray's work, as well as the work of many other visionary artists. So there will be incredible works of art from the visionary arts, art movement. And it won't just be that, it's going to be the hub of a psychedelic community. And really, it's, as far as I'm concerned, and it sounds so woo-woo and cheesy, but it's a portal, man. They are really opening up a portal where you can enter into a visionary state of consciousness and walk around inside of it. I got to visit it when I was in upstate New York. I got to see it in its embryonic state, and even now it seems to be radiating a kind of incredible, mythical potency. So I can't imagine what's going to happen when they actually complete construction on this project. And I'm releasing the podcast on this day because this is the first day of their Kickstarter to try to raise right around $70,000 to go in the direction of completing this temple. If you go to buildentheon.com, you can find all the information that you need about this incredible project that they are involved in. And if there I can't think of a better way to spend money than by contributing to an art temple or something as beautiful and incredible as this. I'm not going to try to describe it anymore because we talk about it in the interview that you're about to hear, and we're going to jump right into that. But first, some very quick business.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I've even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is, but Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact. Not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence. Not a Ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charges left on the thing. And it's, I don't know, man. It holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge. I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet. Get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. Now, everybody, please pull open your astral brain, pull out your third eye, and point it in the direction of Entheon, sending as much high-powered transcendental love energy as you possibly can in the direction of our two amazing guests, Alex and Allison Gray. Alex and Allison, welcome back to the podcast. This is seriously the coolest day of my life. I'm here at Cosm in this beautiful place in the studio of my favorite artist on earth drinking coffee with you guys. This is surreal. I'm going to be grinning about this for the rest of the tour that I'm on. Thank you for welcoming me here. It's so cool to be here with you.
Well, the feeling is very, very mutual. We are in love with your podcast and are really great fans of yours, as well as we just love you personally.
Thank you.
Thank you, Duncan. Thank you for coming all the way to Cosm here in the Hudson Valley.
My pleasure. I've got my bus parked out back. Clearly, this is a simulation that I no longer believe that in this reality, because this is too cool. It just doesn't make sense. But here's the first question I have for you. I don't even know if it's a question. It's a realization I had as I was walking back to the bus to get my podcast equipment. You two are the only people I know who have founded a religion. And that kind of blows my mind, because you know, you hear of people from time to time, ironically, maybe they would start a religion or something like this. But you guys are actually, to me, you seem to be conduits of something, and that is what you would need to be if you were going to start a religion. But my question is, if you are a conduit, which I think you are, and many people would agree, what is the thing that you're channeling? What is coming through? What is the thing that is spawning this new religion?
Cosmic creativity, I would say. That's, I think, religion without mythology. You exist, therefore you are an emanation of a cosmic process. And we call that cosmic creativity. Evolution is creativity. You know, they are the same thing. And so creativity is like evolution in your hands. And you can affect your world, and you can evolve the consciousness of those around you if you work out skillful means of intriguing the monkey mind of most, myself included. This is why I think we need aesthetic arrest. You know, visionary art attempts to capture mystical experiences, which are defined as the most important experiences in a person's life. It's when you meet God. It's God contact. And so there's a visual component oftentimes. Sometimes it's a whiteout or a blackout or right, something like that. But sometimes there's a crystallized or moments of getting to God consciousness. And on those visionary, mystical moments, some of them remain emblazoned in your memory,
right,
or the feeling of it. So visionary art is a way to articulate the unpronounceable language of creative expression, like Allison does in her secret writing.
I wanted to tell you that Cosm, Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, which was, as we were saying before, became a nonprofit in 1996 and became a church in 2008. Well, Cosm is a radically welcoming, transdenominational, interfaith art church where we celebrate art as a spiritual, creativity in general as a spiritual expression, as a spiritual path. So anyway, we have, what we do here is we have, it's art is life. And as art is life, it is social sculpture. It is creating environments in which people can have the most uplifting experiences. We basically think up, you know, for us, the things that we'd most like to do if we were going to be with groups, because it seems like groups want to be with us.
Yes.
So that's really what started it. And so we started the full moon ceremonies in 2003, January. And we've had a consecutive unbroken chain of full moon gatherings since then. It's about 163 coming up next week. So, yeah, we just create a format that people like to get together in.
You guys are supremely hard workers, but I wonder how much of this seems like you're responsible for and how much of it feels like it just grew around you?
Well, the first full moon ceremonies were in our home in Brooklyn, and we were 100% responsible for it, except I have to say we had maybe 5 or 7 people working in our home at that time. So we have people that have been with us since the beginning. Eli Morgan, you know, helped us produce our first parties. But I was the prom chairman in high school, so it's kind of like this has always been our life.
What was the theme that year, dear?
Psychedelic. It was 1969 prom at the Park School in Brooklynville, Maryland. We had the psychedelic prom of a lifetime. But anyway, yeah. No, I mean, we have always created events. We've always created, well, we were performance artists together first, you know, like early in our relationship. And Alex was a performance artist when I met him, and I did installations art. We met in art school in a class called Conceptual Mixed Media. I've said that maybe before.
Yes.
So, yeah, but that's what our work, you know, together, our collaborative work has always been around.
And I don't mean to keep going back to this, that you founded a religion, but you did found a religion, and it is real. And you're the leaders of this.
Well, we're the founders of Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, like I said, it became a nonprofit organization in 1996. Before that, Alex and I had a business together called A. Gray Company. We still have it. But it was basically, COSM became our nonprofit offshoot. It was like we could create these events and talk to people about our vision to build a temple.
Right.
And that was something that happened to Alex and I on MDMA in 1985. It was our first MDMA experience. We simultaneously envisioned the temple.
And do you think that vision came from inside of you or outside of you? That's the woo-woo question I'm trying to get at here, is where is it coming from? Is this in your religion or in your own personal subjective understanding of the universe? Do you imagine that art is coming from someplace inside, or is it divinely inspired by some higher intelligence?
Well, my perspective is now that there's a lot of different hierarchies of entities that artists work with. You know, and they used to call them daemons. They used to, or spiritual forces, higher beings, angels. Blake used to deal with a lot of influences of departed masters and things like this. And so, in the visionary domain, you're connected with probably everyone and everything, and the. Because the same consciousness, the one consciousness that moves creation, is moving through us all. And if you begin to identify with that force rather than, you know, your singular physical emanation, you start to relax into the field that brought you into existence, and that it's natural for anyone to be creative. We can't help but be creative. Our thoughts are our creations. The way that we hold reality is a fabrication, a creation. So we attempt to learn to be better craftsmen, sculptors of our thinking, and use whatever the aesthetic metaphors that we can to see that we are co-creators with a divine artist that is orchestrating the masterwork, the spectacle of everyday reality.
Right.
And since I believe that's a cosmic force, and it's pretty undeniable, you know, we come from a cosmos. We know that we're on a 4-billion-year-old planet in a 13.7 billion year old cosmos. So we came from somewhere cosmic.
Yes.
And we're related to it. In fact, we depend on it for our existence. We wouldn't exist unless there were a cosmos to birth us.
That's right.
So since that we're an emanation of the cosmic body, where it could be nowhere on Earth that people might be, nowhere in the cosmos other than Earth where podcasts might be happening.
Right.
Maybe this is the only spot in the cosmos. That's a pretty vast web of physical stuff and non-physical stuff. And it's so massive, but we might be the only planet podcasting.
Whoa.
I don't know.
I imagine every
interesting thought,
has
though.
A podcast, but
I think, yeah.
Well, let's get on the network,
we
man.
We just haven't become receivers enough yet. You know, we have to learn how to receive because.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Becoming receivers. And it seems like that's part of what you teach. And it seems like you just do it spontaneously. Every single time that I've been around YouTube by now, just out of nowhere, you clear some kind of artistic block that I've had, and you do it. It's not as though you're like intending to be teachers, but it seems like that's just what you're doing as a matter of being alive.
Actually, you know, we teach. We've set up a certain amount of teaching that we'd be willing to do because neither one of us were teachers. Alex taught at NYU for 10 years, but he wasn't crazy about the way he taught anatomy there because it was not spiritual. It was really teaching the hardcore anatomy class. And so, but he was really good at that. And I taught also. But here we have a couple of workshops for painters and just a couple a year. And then every month on a Sunday afternoon, we have something we call Art Church where we basically do a class. It's a 3-hour, art exercise and art history and art as a spiritual, aspect, in its spiritual aspects. I mean, last Art Church, for instance, Alex spoke on the Cosmic Christ because it was Easter. And he's got a painting called Cosmic Christ, which is very, very detailed. It has a lot of scenarios. And he could go through and kind of tell all the stories of the painting. And it was a great, it's a talk. That painting is a talk. A lot of Alex's work is like that. He creates some stuff, just even Entheon. I think that the image of Entheon, which is really a sculpture that's a building.
Yes.
And it's Alex's sculpture that's a building that he's working on with Ryan Tottle, our animator from Disney, who's this genius, who's helped Alex realize the sculpture of Entheon. But it's just an entire series, visual story. It's like a visual story. Like Alex can put that into slides and he will tell you about everything about that. And it is, and that is the way he teaches.
I wish you all could be here with us so that you could see
this, Entheon,
the beautiful sculpture of Entheon. Maybe you could just very quickly describe it for
people. Okay. Would you like to, Alex? Would you like to describe it? Do you think you can get through this? We've been doing this.
That would be a cool thing to attempt at any rate.
Let's give it a shot.
Well, in 2012,
tell us it what it looks
on
like.
June
it's wrapped 3rd, with faces.
On June 3rd, 2012, I had a vision of this building as having a head, one gigantic head, completely wrapping the building. Now, it's one Godhead with multiple faces, and the faces are crowned with the different world wisdom traditions. So they're an emblem for most of the world religions that are above the foreheads, above the cosmic eye of the great Godheads. Now, the eye of God there is the multiple cosmoses, multiple Milky Ways are kind of spinning in the eyes of the Creator. And out from the eye of the Creator, perhaps almost like a tear, is the creative imagination. It's the angel of the creative imagination, and it is holding an artist's brush that is like a gun at attention, and a caduceus-like healing staff, a hermetic staff, weaves up that paintbrush, and it ends in the brush at the heart, and the heart is an emanation of multiple eyes, the vision crystal that is the heart of this being. And this being bridges the cosmic eye of the Creator with the human eye that's below. So there's a kind of direct line from the religious intuition that comes through the cosmic eye of the Creator that's universal, and then through the creative imagination reaches the human consciousness, where it is the creative expression of that religion. All religions have creative expression, or else we wouldn't know of them. And so, therefore,
let's talk about what it looks like, though, too.
Okay.
There's the angels of the four corners.
Yes, there's angels at the four corners. At each of the cardinal directions, this building is facing the cardinal direction. So those corner angels each demarcate the north and the west. And then the dragons, DNA dragons of consciousness evolution, burst out of the heads of those corner angels and and ramp themselves up to the top of the roof, where they combine their two tails becoming one head. So four becomes two and then becomes one. The steeple head is the being of the, it's really the humanity. It's an anthropocosm, really.
We lovingly call it the four-faced quad god.
Yeah. And it's the people of the four directions coming together in visionary oneness.
Wow.
Because that's the point.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And so down below on the ground, underneath the kind of raw-like bow ties of the underneath the creators, you've got a narrative of the corner angels, and up from their corner comes an evolutionary kind of trajectory that we know from a fish to a crawling
yes.
amphibian, then to a reptile, and then to a dog, and then to a primitive human, and so on. So it comes to the point where that in the narrative where the modern man is facing a skeleton. And underneath of him is a child who's reaching up. They're all reaching toward the vision of the future of the earth. And it's dripping off of the paintbrush that is the evolutionary force and the creative expression that is now dangling this question mark in front of humanity. On the other side, there's a woman who is going through the same evolutionary ascent, and they also are facing the skeleton. And so it's our moment. You know, where
and the doorway itself, Alex, is
the door. Yes, the doorway itself is a projection out from the building that's a cube that completes the cube of the building.
But it's creating a better world.
That's Adam and Eve have returned to the garden and are there at the tree of wisdom, which is the harvest of all the fruits of all the different wisdom paths. And they have brushes in their hands. And they, up from this tree of life, which is growing out of mushrooms, and there's a Kabbalah and I guess a hermetic staff, all of that tree-like ascending energy, kundalini force, is coming to into their expression of they're both creating, part of creating a better world. So it's about the unity of our polarities. And that's the entry point then into Entheon.
I wanted to get back to, though, the idea of us creating a religion, and that you think that it's like we the people that you know that created a religion.
Right.
And I just wanted to say this about that. I think that Alex's art has long been a context for a spiritual life of a growing people that really started around the Woodstock Festival and around that time, around the 60s, the late 60s, when psychedelics... I mean, Dr. Hoffman first experimented on LSD in 1943, but it really wasn't until the 60s, I think, that our primarily white, but black too, and Hispanic too, and Egyptian too, and all over the world. And we go to Moscow, and we go to, you know, Buenos Aires and Santiago. We go, you know, all through certainly South America. The psychedelic revolution that started in the late 60s we, I think, recognized that as a spiritual life. I mean, for Alex and I, it was the reason we got together. Alex's first spiritual experience, he turned from being a nihilist to a mystic overnight with LSD in my apartment. So when I had had that experience when I read Ram Dass's book Be Here Now in 1971, but no one really to share it with because it was very anti-spiritual times and I hadn't met those people yet, those right people, which I went immediately out to seek. But anyway, Alex, we identified each other as having this incredible spiritual opening, not just like, oh yeah, I became a better comedian, right, and better person, and like everybody becomes a better person, and I had been doing that too, and then I read Ram Dass's book and had an encounter with God. So anyway, we had both had this God encounter, and a lot of the people in our community either have had God encounters through psychedelics, right, or they've had God encounters through holotropic breath work or right, many other ways, meditation, or they are still seeking that. They believe that it's possible and they want to go to a place where people can at least talk about right, that is possible. So we do some of that. We do some of that talking about that.
Now, this, and so much of your art is, it seems like, about having that God experience or that connective experience. And then both of you are incredibly talented when it comes to bringing that experience into the world, because many of us can't do that. It's like a kind of, well, as well as you. And I know every time I say those kinds of things, you guys frown because you guys are very universal. But what I mean is, okay, it's like fishing. It's like fishing. When you go into the psychedelic realm or the mystical realm, you're taking this boat out into these uncharted waters. I think David Lynch talks about this. He describes this fishing, and you pull these fish up, and if you... And some people are very good at bringing the fish back, and some people aren't. Some people aren't as good. Even though we have these incredible experiences, I could never imagine having a vision of a temple like you did, and then somehow remembering any of the details that you just described, to see this thing, and to it's so detailed, and every piece of it represents something. And that something is a very cohesive philosophy, to go into that space and then somehow remember that and bring it back and then construct this thing. That's what I'm saying. You guys are incredibly good at that. You're very, very good at
that. Oh, Alex is good at that. Alex is a visualizer of things. You see, I'm a visualizer of inner worlds. I don't really visualize outer things. Alex is so, but you would be amazed to see the earliest drawings. What's missing from seeing this beautiful, amazing sculpture that's a building called Entheon, yeah, is the wall of drawings that Alex has done to envision this, to get here. And it's been in a lot of different phases. And this one is definitely influenced by the 1882 carriage house that it is wrapping around.
Okay, I see. But very quickly, could you just talk a little bit about the process of having the initial vision and then bringing it into the world, the birthing process or whatever you would describe it as?
Well, as far as the multiple faced Godhead that wraps the building, which is the primary emblem, I guess, that comes out. Well, the drawing was done in David Wolf's class that was being held here on June 3rd. And I just brought my sketchbook
down,
and I was like making pictures of David and stuff. And then it just like suddenly struck me. I had done a painting that had these lines of faces that were interconnecting. And, of course, a lot of my stuff is like that. But this was the first time I just kind of went for it. And then we did our sun altar here at COSM, just wrapping the same kind of Buddha head around this cylinder. And I thought, like, wait a minute, you know, that could work for this building, which I had been putting all kinds of other little designs on, kind of ticky-tacky, like a tattoo that you might put on 1 year and then another year and another part of the body. And this, it wasn't all cohesive.
I got you.
So this became a kind of uniting element. First of all, I realized that you could do it at a certain height because there's a two-story side and a three-story side of the building, and each of those will be entry and exit points. And so that in itself is an intriguing conundrum to work with architecturally.
Yes, because you can you walk in on the first floor side where there is a 19-foot ceiling, and the first gallery you go into is the Gallery of the International Visionary Art Movement. It's the art, it's the original art that's tucked away in people's studios that has become iconic in the visionary art movement. Like, people know this work because they see it in banners and clothing and every kind of thing and festivals all the time. But the real pieces are hiding in somebody's studio. So we're going to have an annual exhibition. We're only going to change the show once a year and have the best originals coming out of people's studios and on view. And then upstairs, then you go up to the second floor, and you can actually, and I have a room, and Alex has a room, and then Alex and I have a couple of collaborative rooms from performances and things like that. And then Alex has a self-portrait, because he's been doing self-portraits. He has thousands of them. So there'll be a self-portrait room. But out the back of the second floor, it will be a patio. So you can go out on the second floor, and that's where you're going to go and have your tapas and elixirs and things like that. And then upstairs on the third floor is where the large meetings happen, because our full moons gatherings have become very large. I dare not tell you how large, but it's a range. Hundreds come, and sometimes great many. It's like a little mini festival in the Hudson Valley. Anyway, every full moon and every equinox and every solstice and the Deities and Demons Masquerade Ball, which is when we wear headdresses like the ones you were just seeing being made here. But anyway, so yeah, but we will have the use of that back area. And then the third floor, like I said, is the big meeting room. I can't wait to take you up there. The ceilings are like 25 feet high.
I can't wait to see it.
And then there's the Sacred Mirrors Room, which is where a lot of people are going to want to get married and have rituals and do a special overnight ceremony there with us and their groups. And so that's how we intend to bring, you know, more people into such an inspiring space that they can interact with.
How often will people be able to visit it? Are you a little...
Right now, we are open. Right today, we are open. We are open 4 days a week, okay. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You can come here. We haven't shown you the house yet. It has a lot of art in it, and people stay overnight. So there's 10 rentable guest rooms that help support COSM.
You're so open. Isn't there the paranoid, neurotic part of myself when I imagine putting...
We're a business. We are a church. But basically, in order to be, to stay legitimate and have everything work and pay all your bills, you know, you have to have income streams.
Right.
And so we have all kinds of fun stuff we do, really. Events and workshops like you just saw. We have a cafe. We have a store. But all these things, every cent of it goes toward keeping this place as an open public center for people to have be uplifted. For people to have uplifting things happen. That's all it is. Also memorial services, but we try to make our memorial services uplifting. I mean, we do everything the churches do, and that's why we became a church. It was we didn't realize, we never thought that's what we were becoming, but with baby blessings, weddings, and memorial services.
Baby
plus
blessings.
Yes, we do those too, many of them. We got a lot of little ones coming in. A lot of love happens here. People meet each other and get married and have children.
Have you given yourselves titles at all? Are you like a chaplain?
We actually are ministers of COSM.
So you're ministers.
It's our board. The board of directors, you know, is the one that makes you ministers or not ministers. It doesn't matter whether you have a theological degree or a license from the Universal Light Church. You are a minister by virtue of what your board says that you are. And you have to have a board. I mean, in order to do this, you have to have all kinds of legitimacy.
Right.
So you have to know what those rules are and do them.
So that's one of the things, one of the many things that's cool about the team that you have formed here, is that you're really able to function on both of these levels, because the world requires paperwork for some reason.
And oh, yeah.
To me, that's always been the proof that there might be a Satan, is that all the paperwork that you have to do, it seems...
What is paperwork? Paperwork is network. It's like everybody wants a knipple. If you're Jewish, you know what I'm talking about. Everybody wants a little something, a little piece of... You're going to have a business in my valley. I was here before you. I want a little something.
Right, right.
So you have to pay, you know, Caesar and pay the piper, yes, and pay the, you know, the plumber and yes, pay the electrician. You know, everybody's got to get their inspection, because then it goes to the pool of electricians and plumbers. But, you know, the network is the net of beings.
That's cool.
Alex's last book was called Net of Being. You know, it's our community is the net of being. So you try to work
That's
within
really
a community.
A very positive way to look at that. That's an incredible way to look at it. Because whenever I have those forms to fill out, I just feel like,
you need to hire somebody
to fill out the forms. That's a great idea.
Oh, I wouldn't do them. You should get somebody to help you. Somebody wants to help you. Who out there wants to help Duncan? Everybody. You're going to have your phones all blown up with people who want to help you. Volunteers will come.
What I want to talk about, though, is that you have this religion, for lack of a better word, happening here. And so you clearly have it functioning on all these different levels. One of the levels, like what you're describing, the board of directors, the business side of it, the human connections that have to be made. And then, as you were describing Entheon, it's clear that you also have a very developed philosophy that has a great many parts. And you were saying earlier, religion without mythology. And I don't know if you would call this a mythology, but it does sound, it does have within it, it feels like an amalgamation of maybe a lot of different world religions kind of meeting. But it does feel as though if you wanted to, maybe I just want you guys to like write a Bible, but it does feel like if you wanted to, you could. Feels like if you wanted to, you could very easily break down this philosophy in an understandable way that wasn't just visual.
Right. Well, I've been kind of working on that. I call it art theology, and it's where creative expression meets the spiritual quest. And that, I believe, begins with the idealist tradition, you know, Socrates. And so they spoke of the relationship with this ideal realm. Now, for us, you could use the word visionary realm in place of the, quote, ideal realm. They're talking about archetypal spiritual realities that are described in all the different wisdom traditions. You know, you've got your bodhisattvas, and they're all outside of time, really. They're outside of our normal relationship to time and duration, and they're existing on a more spiritual archetypal realm. That's where all the gods still dwell.
Yes.
You know, and any tripster can attest to the same reality. You see, Socrates was a tripper, and so was Plato.
Was he really?
Absolutely. All of them did the Eleusinian Mysteries, and that was the civil religion of Greece, and all of the great philosophers, including Aristotle, but Plato especially, and Socrates, both had been through the Eleusinian Mysteries, and at the height of the Mysteries, after a few days, they drink the Kaikion, and the ritual of Demeter and Persephone and going down to Hades and then returning. It would be done around this time of year, around the springtime. And so she returns, Persephone returns, and life comes back to the earth. And as life comes back to the earth, you see that God exists.
Right.
And everyone... you know, with this rush of life, is tripping. And who's in touch with the ideal realm? Yo, it's Socrates in the Eleusinian Mysteries. And he's seeing the ideal archetypes, the Platonic solids, the sacred geometries right. are described first here. Any trickster knows about all of the same basic outline
yes.
that came down from the earliest Greek. This is the foundation of Western civilization, really. Wow. And those were the insights that most of the love tribe feels when they trip. And so you can follow any world philosophy and world religion that has the visionary worlds as part of a component, you know, like Ibn Arabi, the great Sufi mystic. He described this realm of the imagination, and he saw it as a place where God meets God.
Right.
He described it as the angel. And in a lot of ways, that's why I have an angel of the creative imagination there, is due to Ibn Arabi, who described it like that.
So this thing that you're saying that we've all seen, the trippers, as you say, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And every time, you know, when I think back to the times that I did get to see it, oh, I had no idea what it was. I was like a chimpanzee that walked into a space shuttle or something. You're just gazing at this thing like, what is, I can't read this. I'm illiterate. I don't know what it is. But you're saying that this is a universal field that people are tuning into, not a subjective thing inside of everybody, not as though you take the psychedelic or enter the psychedelic state and you're like mashing the digital watch and maybe there's some random hallucinations that are happening. You're saying that there is some kind of data field accessible via psychedelics that all of us can see and that is not subjective.
I want to say something too, though, here. I just want to say that we see festivals gathering all over the world, or at least evening programs or 24-hour programs, depends on where you're in the world, where psychedelic tripping people want to come together and dance and ecstatic dance and have ecstatic music. This yes. has been going on. And the thing that we're starting to see and just beginning to see, and the cosmos is a representative of, is permanence, any kind of ownership, any kind of this is a place that's not just a, you know, we drop it down different locations, different summers, you know, there's lots of great series, but there's, you know, more and more there's a sense of community where we feel that we can, I don't know, create these centers, these places, these neighborhoods or these towns, these nodes where we can have events and art spaces and things like that are in that spiritual life. That
right.
you know, you want to get together with like-minded people and
yes.
you want to be able to talk openly about your last epiphany,
right.
you know, and you don't want to have to be, you know, shut down and worry about who you're talking
that's
to
right.
about your most inspired moments of life.
Right.
So that's what we're creating here, is a place that we hope will be like more like a legacy, like something that we can hand down to other generations of people that also have that experience. Because I know, you know, having been a psychedelophile since, you know, the 60s, I mean, there's two more generations of that, you know, kind of behind me almost.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're seeing people whose grandmothers were, you know, at Woodstock. So in any case, it's just a growing generational thing of a spiritual kind. And, you
right.
know.
Well, yeah. to me, I mean, it's just so incredible that, so here's this great philosophy you have and that I completely connect to, which is we can share this experience. This is not an experience that a lonely, crazy person has. This thing that you experienced that you thought was just you freaking out or whatever, because this is the war on drugs. This is what it's done to us.
Right.
It's made these visions that so many of us
it's
have
criminalized our God contact.
That's it. And it's exactly. And what happens is people have these experiences and they think, well, that was when I went crazy for about
right.
7 hours.
Right. I can't talk about that with anyone.
Right.
And people become really actually quite concerned about their sanity and about they're worried, you know, like if they have no context, to discuss the visionary experience, then hopefully they'll look things up about it, about what happened to me.
Yes.
You know, if somebody dosed them or if they were ignorant about it before, hopefully it was there were some good and important lessons learned, and that we never tell people to take these substances.
Right.
It just happens to be that this is how we got woken up a bit,
right,
and connected with a spiritual tradition. You know, without grounding it in understanding about the great traditions and doing some form of meditation on a daily basis, this is why creativity is such a great practice. You're always in the now. You always have to focus on what you're doing, try to let go of everything. It's a great way to meditate as you're leaving something behind. You've got a little drawing, or you've got a little work of art. You know, it's kind of, it's a record of your state of being. And this is what art shares, are our states of being. So we see so much art that concentrates on revealing the difficulties that we are experiencing as a species. And it's really important to show that, and even the shadow side.
Even but the shadow side.
I believe it's important to share some of it, but not to... I wish there were a sense of balance that the possibility that humanity has yet to experience the beauty of the sacred earth that we inhabit, those elements are, and our cosmic body, basically, that we come from and are a little emanation of that cosmic process. And in that, everything alive should sing, you know, because it's a glorious incarnation. Any incarnation is super awesome, God. Thank you very much. I do appreciate this moment, you know. And so that appreciation is also something that is basic to art. You know, you go to look at or listen to your favorite music or something to appreciate it. You start to appreciate life in the context of appreciating creations by other inspired people.
Yeah, that's right. And this is the...
Yeah, go turn off my arm.
To
I
me...
I turned it off.
Oh, good, oh, good. Okay. Canceled.
What happened? Well, the oven was on. That's...
I'm cooking at the same time as we're on your podcast.
Right, sorry. Allison Grace.
It got burned?
Yeah.
Allison Grace cooking for me. This is one of... This is a cool day.
Got up to the last
amazing
moment.
Day. But so... There's so much that you all are doing, and I keep trying to summarize it in my mind by breaking it into pieces. But it sounds like what you're doing is you're bringing people together so they can share this mutual experience of gazing into this data set or a field of experience that many, many people aren't even aware is out there. And those who have experienced it, you are changing what a lot of people found to be very terrifying or an indication of some spiral into madness, into the realization that, no, this is a connection with God. And that's not, it seems like that's what you're doing. You're helping people have the guts to recognize that this terrain that you are swimming into is something, is a shared experience, and that it's something that all of us can help bring into this world by mapping it, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's that's why all the visionary artists are doing such a fantastic job. They're basically putting together a visual encyclopedia of altered states.
Right.
And
that's it.
It's ever been to this dimension? Yeah.
Yes.
Whoa.
That's it.
Well, the most skilled visionary artists are doing that. Of course, as a genre, you know, there are some that really hit the heights. And so we're really excited to feature some of them here. You know, like we got muralists and we got courses. You can take classes with them. There's a place where people can go and learn stuff.
So I'm sorry I keep doing this, but what you guys are, what this reminds me of, is you are building a kind of telescope here. It's like it reminds me of a telescope that is not scanning the external cosmos as much as giving people all of these methods to gaze into this internal cosmos, which is a shared experience.
You're so right. Entheon is a telescope for inner space.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what
totally.
It feels like. Yeah, you're building a telescope. And that, oh my God, yes.
It's a lens. You know what, the relic we got from Albert Hoffman's family was his lenses he wore when he created LSD.
Wow.
So his bicycles from, I mean, his glasses that he wore when he mixed up the medicine. So it's a lens. And I thought, wow, visionary art is a lens.
Yeah.
Into a higher dimension, into the mystical reality. And by validating other people's experience of those states, oh, it was something like that. Wow, it really was something like that. You know, in the family of it, then we see like, well, maybe I'm not mad. Maybe I just got a glimpse of that world that everybody has access to, but rarely experiences, except if they have some kind of telescope in.
That's it. And this is important because, you know, we just discovered gravitational waves, like they're using the interferometers. So they just picked up gravitational waves. And people are saying this is such a big deal because anytime humanity has another optic nerve or another mode of apprehending reality, then it's not just that we see that it exists, but anytime we find a new thing, electricity, whatever it is, anytime we make LSD, anytime we make these discoveries, there's the initial just, holy shit, look at that. Gravitational waves are real. But then we can figure out how to work with them, how to use them as tools and as methods. And I don't see any reason why that wouldn't apply to this internal shared subjective experience that people have been having for thousands and thousands of years, which is why it's so important what you're doing here, because the more you validate and legitimize the experience that all of us have been having, that many of us have had to stay in the closet about, can't talk about, can't mention it, can't even go any, the more you do that, the more you give us not just the chance to have those moments of awe, but wait, if this is a map of a real terrain, what can we do with it in a real world sense? Is there a way to plug into this? Is this an energy source? Is it some kind of visual representation of dark matter? Is that what it is? Whatever it is, it's so important. So I'm very excited that this is happening. And
I wanted to say one thing about temple building, if you don't mind.
Please.
The act of temple building is something that Alex and I have studied over decades, that we've traveled to see a lot of sacred sites. And, you know, you don't always know everything about the people that built the temples. But unlike building palaces, you know, palaces could be the work of slaves or work of, you know, hired people. But the work of temples is the work of a community. A community of like-minded, spiritually oriented people get together and decide to have a temple.
Right.
And so we've been to Bali and places where the temple is in the middle of the community, and every small community has a temple, but the more wealthy the community is, the more wealthy the temple. So the more successful, let's say, they are together, the more successful. And what does that mean? That means, because a temple is a center.
Right.
It's just a center. It's not, you know, for industry or anything like that. It's a center. So it's a place for people to gather. It's people to remember their spiritual connectedness.
Yes.
So anyway, that is almost like extra. It's like, you know, you don't need it for survival, but you do.
Right.
And the better you get at it, the more beautiful your temple is, the more the more, I don't know, the more upwardly spiraling is your community.
That's right. And this community that you have is not limited just to this geographic area.
No, not at all.
Your community is spread out all over the planet.
Oh, you should see the people that are helping us do our Kickstarter video are all over the place. So, you know, it's like they don't live anywhere near here. And then there's us, and we're here in the Hudson Valley holding it down for anybody like you, Duncan, who happened to be coming through.
So I'm lucky.
Hey, we're lucky. We're lucky.
But we got it. So here's the, I guess, I don't know. I'm going to do it. It's embarrassing. Here's the pitch, friends.
What is that?
You got to help. This is, so they're doing this incredible Kickstarter. You hear me talk about it at the beginning of this thing, but I have, you know, I'm sorry. This is going to be, I'm going to embarrass you now.
Why?
So get ready.
Okay.
So one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is every once in a while you get around people where you realize, holy shit, this is real, man. Like, this is real. I feel like when I get around Ram Dass, I get this kind of like intense high, like just this very specific feeling of optimism about the universe in general. And I get that same thing whenever I'm around you two. You are transformational figures, and it's so important what you're doing. And so just how often do you get a chance, oh, sweet listeners, and I'm sorry if I seem all flabbergasted, but these guys really, really do like blow my mind every time. How often do you get a chance to build a temple in this dimension, and especially a temple like the one being described here? This is our thing. This is our thing. You know, whatever the disconnection you might feel between you and the religion you were raised in, but this is our thing that's growing out of us. So I hope from listening to this, you will go to their Kickstarter, contribute to help Entheon really come into existence, because we need it. But also, how cool will it be when you finally pull up and see a temple that you helped build? That's nuts. You don't get a lot of chances for that. And so I hope you guys will do that. I'm sorry for the spiel. Maybe you guys could talk a little bit about the Kickstarter now. And
I think it's enough. I think you said it all. Well, we should tell the dates.
Yes, I believe we're starting on Bicycle Day, April 19th.
We're launching in San Francisco at our 7th annual Bicycle Day celebration.
Yep.
Bicycle Day, for those of you who don't know, maybe you could
say what Bicycle Day is.
Well, Bicycle Day is the day that Hoffman willingly took the first dose of LSD, and he didn't know what was coming. He only took millionths of a gram and decided he was dying after about an hour because the world was looking very weird and wanted to get home and die at home. So he took his bicycle. And because it was wartime, and they had to, so they call it Bicycle Day because of that strange ride through the streets of Basel. And he's so recovered, and it's been celebrated by people who've had an opening from LSD ever since. And so we've had great musicians come and help us. And this year we have Gaudi, and we have Sidecar Tommy from Beats Antique, and wonderful, wonderful artists, Diamond Saints and things.
Cool.
And other visionary artists, Chris Dyer will be joining us on stage. And
well,
great.
I just want to say about our Kickstarter campaign, it starts on Bicycle Day in San Francisco, and it ends on the anniversary of our first date, May 31st, 1975. That was our first date. We never left. We've been together ever since. So we think of that as like our first anniversary. Then there's our wedding anniversary, but still. So it'll end on May 31st. It'll be a 40-day game that we play. And if you haven't done Kickstarter, our goal is to get you to go and look at it. Just, you know, take a look at what we're doing. And if it looks exciting, play the game with us. There's all kinds of amazing rewards designed by Alex and even me. And, you know, beautiful,
also the
new and unique
artist.
Rewards. Exclusive to this particular thing. People like to have beautiful altar objects and things to vision on their power objects. And that if it reminds you of us, that makes us extra, extra happy.
Yeah, and one of the things, if you guys are interested, one of the things is I'm going to do just like a hour conversation with somebody. Check out, just check the Kickstarter. It'll be there. We'll record the conversation. Hopefully it will be interesting and cool enough that we could use it as a podcast, which would be super cool. But if not, we'll just chat. But that's going to be there. There's going to be a lot of other cool stuff there. So,
wow, Duncan Trussell special reward. I think that's a really exciting offer. Duncan, thank you very much. There's so many people who want to meet you and to talk to you and have been influenced by your podcast. So thank you for offering
anything
that. That's going
to
be awesome.
Duncan, we love you so much.
I love your show.
Too.
Thank you. You guys are the best. I'm going to have links to all of this in the comment section of this podcast. Thank you guys for being on the
show.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.